What's up, everybody? Welcome to the TNT Wellness and Nutrition Podcast. I'm Thomas.
I'm Tyson.
I studied exercise physiology and competed in many various sports ranging from wrestling to ultra running. I use that knowledge to combine today's science with ancient wisdom to live an optimal lifestyle and to spread that information onto the masses.
I'm a lifelong weightlifter and I'm obsessed with health and wellness. My degree in biology, with an emphasis in neurobiology, physiology, and behavior, allows me to take a deep dive into the most current literature and bring that information to you.
Thank you for listening to the podcast. If you'd like to show your support, please rate and review on your favorite podcast provider, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or SoundCloud. Also, sign up on our website, tntwellnessandnutrition.com, for all of our up-to-date content.
Let's get this started. What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of TNT Wellness and Nutrition Podcast. This is episode 63. Today, we're going to be talking about the alkaline diet. We're doing a whole series on some good diets to do, some bad diets to do. So we talked about the Mediterranean diet last week. So if that interests you, check that out. And this diet, the alkaline diet, revolves around eating more alkaline foods to raise your pH, to be a little more basic. And it thinks that's going to make you more healthy. So we're going to dive into the science and see if that's true or not. But first, let's do a quick check-in. So Tom, how's your week been?
It's been pretty good. So last week, when we were recording the podcast, I was in the middle of a three-day fast.
Oh, yeah.
I felt great, but I had to end it. We went out to dinner for my friend's birthday on Friday night, so I ended it at 3 days. I really wanted to push through it. So this week, I'm going to do like another three-day fast, see how that one goes. And if I like the way that one goes, maybe I'll push it to like 4 or 5 days. It's been a while since I've like really done some like longer fasts, and I just kind of forgot like how good it feels.
Oh man, it's a trip. It's like you get addicted to food sometimes, and you're like, oh, I like to eat. But when you fast, you're like, oh, this is a great thing.
You sleep better. Like yes. That's one of the biggest things. I just had more stable energy, more free time. Like you just kind of forget how much time you really have, and then you're like not cooking food. It's just like what am I doing right now?
Yeah.
Kind of bored.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's nice. So yeah, I'm going to do one. I have a few foods at home that are like going to perish. So I need to eat those. And then I'll probably start it tomorrow, maybe Friday.
Just do 5 days. Just say you're going to do 5 days when you start. You can do 5 days. Why?
Well, 5 days is long. So there can be, oh, hey, let's go out to dinner or so-and-so's birthday. Just some sort of social factors.
Yeah, I guess so.
I mean, if it was up to me, like, yeah, I could do 5 days, no problem. But 5 days is damn near a week.
Yeah.
So something's going to mess that up.
Something's going to come up. Yeah. Okay. No, I get that.
Yeah, so that's about it for me. What about you?
I mean, same old stuff, man. Just training, going good. My shoulder's been bugging me, to be honest. And so I've been training every other day this week and not doing any, like, pushing movements.
Okay.
So no chest, no shoulders. I've pretty much been just cycling back, arms, and legs. And today, actually, my shoulder kind of hurts right now, actually, but it's from doing goblet squats.
Okay.
So I was doing goblet squats with like a 120-pound dumbbell. And it didn't hurt during my workout, but afterwards, just holding the dumbbell in front of me, that you really are using your shoulder.
Yeah.
You know? So that kind of, I guess that sucks. So it just shows me my shoulder's not 100% yet, so.
Maybe you should do something that we were talking about like 10 minutes ago before we started recording, blood flow restriction training.
Yeah.
That'd be like a perfect time to use that.
It would be. But I told you I stopped. So yeah, we were talking a little bit about BFR, blood flow restriction training, and I used to do that on my quads and my arms, but you pretty much just wrap a band around your like upper thighs super tight, and then you just do movements like a squat for as many reps as you can, you rest, you do it again. But it's super uncomfortable, and like my little bitch brain is like, I just forgot about it.
Yeah.
But now that you say that, I'll try it next week for sure. I will. I'll give that a shot.
Yeah, and so what that is for people that don't know, it's just kind of a way to kind of like trick your body, or like a hack, like to make your body think that you're doing a lot more work than you actually are.
Yeah.
So instead of benching like 200 pounds, you'll be benching like 50 pounds with these bands wrapped around your arms. And it just kind of restricts the blood flow, just like the title says. And you get a lot of great results from it. It's really good if you're either like injured, like Tyson is, or if you're just starting training, but you can't really do a whole lot. Maybe you're in some sort of recovery from like surgery, or if you're just like old and or if you're traveling and don't have access to a lot of weights. But, you know, it's pretty applicable for a lot of people.
It is, yeah. No, I think just my like gym bro mentality, when I used to look at it and see it years ago, I used to think it was dumb. And like almost like those people who wear oxygen restriction masks.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, you're stupid. You know what I mean? But now that I've done it, I've tried it. If you do it right, it's extremely hard. And anything that is hard, like, I'm on board with. You know what I'm saying? Like, I see a benefit to it. So, yeah, no, shit, I should really do that. Thank you for reminding me. And, but doing research this week for the Alkaline Diet, it really, it kind of struck a nerve with me as far as, like, half-truths. And I think I'm going to talk about that a lot, and you'll see it, is people presenting one side of the story, like, it's a whole side of the story to prove their point. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I mean, because you're not lying. You're just not telling the entire story.
Yes. Like, they present chapter 1 and 2 and say, oh, the book's over. And they don't tell you there's a chapter 3, 4, and 5.
Yeah.
You know? And it really, it kind of, it bugs me. And I saw a video this week on diabetes. It was this vegan doctor guy. He, like, ponytail. Looked like he loved soy. You know what I mean? Just one of those guys. He drank soy for breakfast, lunch, and dinner and fucking loved it. But, and it's not a compliment, by the way. But he was talking about how, like, the accumulation of fat in our tissues is, like, the trigger for diabetes, and therefore we should, like, reduce our overall fat in our diet. Like, therefore the keto diet's bad, ancestral eating's bad, and, of course, plants are good.
So, would that mean that skinny people can't have diabetes?
I don't know.
According to that logic?
Well, you can have fat in our tissues and not in your subcutaneous fat and be skinny fat. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. But pretty much he presented that side of the story, and the accumulation of fat in our tissues is definitely an aspect of diabetes, right? It does make you insulin resistant, and insulin resistance kind of just, it's like a ball rolling downhill. You just get worse and worse. But he didn't say, like, the cue to store body fat is a certain hormone. What would that hormone be?
Oh, that'd be insulin.
Insulin. So what macronutrient promotes insulin response the most?
Carbohydrates, by far.
By far. See, so he presented this like, oh, fat in our tissues is bad, causes diabetes. Okay, that's not necessarily untrue.
No.
But he didn't say the carbs are causing you to store fat, not eating fat. And it made my skin boil. You know what I mean? I was just like, oh, and people, he had a white coat on.
Yeah.
And he sounded so convincing. You know what I'm saying? And I was just like, people are going to buy the hook, line, and sinker. You're going to see it on Facebook. Like, oh, no, they're going to cite this dude. Like, oh, fat causes diabetes. It just made me mad, you know?
Yeah, I mean, the people that should know better apparently don't. That's just kind of the way it is.
That's just the way it is. And this dude, you know this guy knows that sugar promotes insulin, insulin promotes fat storage. You know what I'm saying?
He might not.
How dumb can you be?
Well, I mean, like, that's just what you learn in medical school. That's what you learn. I mean, even if you're not going to medical school, you learn anything health-related. You take any sort of nutrition class. That's what you learn.
That plants are good and fat and meat is bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess so. But yeah, so that's all pretty much new with me this week, just looking into that stuff. And it did make me want to... I went down a little rabbit hole with diabetes again after looking into that. And we talked about diabetes on our Coke episode. Or not Coke, just a soda episode, maybe, I don't know, 20 podcasts ago, so you can look that up if you want. We did a series on the 5 worst foods, and soda was obviously one of them, but I want to do, if you're down eventually, just do a podcast solely on diabetes, you know what I mean?
Oh yeah, we can do that.
Yeah, I think that'll be good, and just to break that down a little bit, because this dude, this little vegan doctor guy, like, got under my skin for some reason, you know?
Yeah, and there's a lot of... I mean, people use diabetes, but there's, I think, like, 4 different forms of diabetes. There's, like, type 1, type 1.5, type 2, type 3. Like,
is it really?
Well, type 1 is, like, if you're born with, I guess, genetic.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Type 1.5 is when you get, it's like an autoimmune issue that you get later on in life.
Yeah, you turn into a type 1.
Yeah.
Okay.
Then type 2 is what most people get. Mm-hmm. And then type 3 would be Alzheimer's.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Got it. Okay, I guess I didn't know that. I just didn't know the titles, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. But all right, yeah, that's all that's new with me this week. Let's get started on the Alkaline Diet. So this diet pretty much, like, according to this diet, it's in our best interest to make sure we eat more alkaline foods than acid foods so that we end up in a more overall alkaline state. And this will supposedly protect us from the diseases of modern civilization. So think cancer, diabetes, obesity, osteoporosis, gout, stuff like that. So this will supposedly protect us from that. And To make sure we stay alkaline, this diet recommends that you track your urine or saliva pH using pH strips. And I guess just a quick overview of pH. So pH is a measure of either a solution's acidity or alkaline. So most people know what acid is, you know?
Yeah, so, you know, battery acid, stomach acid, that's going to be a very, very low pH. Somewhere like the 1s, 2s, somewhere around there.
Yeah, so alkaline would be something that's like 1 is very, very acidic. Something that's a 7 is neutral. And something that's a 14 is very, very alkaline. So our blood normally on average is slightly basic, slightly alkaline. And I already know I'm going to do this. I'm going to mix up the terms alkaline and basic. They mean the same thing. So if I say those two words, they're interchangeable. So our blood is usually slightly basic with a pH of 7.4. And proponents of this diet kind of use that as a marker, saying like, oh, we're naturally more alkaline than acidic. Therefore, we should promote being more and more alkaline.
And one good thing about this diet is you can test for it. It's really easy to test. You pee on a little strip, so you see where your urine pH is, where you can use the saliva testers. Probably don't pee on a strip, then put it in your mouth. It's probably not a good idea. But yeah, it's really easy. You can test for it. So, I mean, you can tell if you're following the diet appropriately or not. It's probably one of the reasons why it's as popular as it is.
100%. Yeah, and I think that really plays into just the instant gratification of today's, like, world. You know what I'm saying? Like, we want to be able to eat this breakfast, test it, and be like, oh, I passed the test. Like, I'm more alkaline now. I ate, like, a kale salad, and now I'm more alkaline. Oh, I'm more healthy. I passed the test. Let's keep it going. You're instantly gratified. And,
Well, even in the ketogenic world, I mean, we're both really big fans of keto, but people are always trying to, like,
pee on strips all the time.
Yeah, try and get as high as ketone reading as they possibly can. They'll fast for longer and longer. Mm-hmm. Why are my ketone levels not getting higher and higher? I mean, like, people get stressed out over that. That's one thing we never really got into. No. I've never tested. I tested urine strips just to see if, like, I was doing the diet right at the beginning. But honestly, I was just too cheap to buy one of those, like, the blood monitors or the saliva ones or the breath ones. I was just too cheap to get one of those.
Yeah, no, same here. Yeah, I remember I tested my urine with, a ketone strip at the very beginning. I actually never, like, tested positive for ketones, ever.
The time I could really tell was when I was, like, fasting. Mm-hmm. And then it was, oh, yeah, you're in a deep level of ketosis.
So you peed on a strip and got, like, red or whatever it is?
Yeah.
Okay.
It was, like, a pretty high mark. It was like probably, I think there's like 10 different grades on there. Mm-hmm. I was at like a number 6 or 7.
Oh, okay.
So I was like, oh, well, that makes sense. I'm 4 days into a fast.
I should be. Yeah, 1,000%.
And I should be wasting ketones right now too, because I'm sure I have too many.
Yeah. Yeah. That's one of the things with the ketone strips are notoriously inaccurate. So if you're out there, you do follow a keto diet and you're not, peeing high in ketone values, don't worry about it. Your body, you could literally be using up all the ketone bodies you're producing. Therefore, you're not wasting them in your urine. So don't worry about it. You know, if you're following keto, like, did you eat 2 cups of rice today? Okay, you're not keto. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But if you had bacon and eggs for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, you're perfectly fine. Don't worry about it, you know? But, to get back to this. So some parts of this diet are true, but like I said earlier, they only give you a piece of the puzzle. So it's true that foods leave behind an acid ash or an alkaline ash. And it's true that the food we eat affects our urine pH. What they don't tell you is that the urine pH has no connection to blood pH or with overall health. So actually, looking into this, I knew that this diet and people who pushed it said that, like, eating meat leaves behind an acid ash. Like, I'd heard that term before, and I remember thinking, like, that is such bullshit. I was like, that term seems so, like, aggressive, doesn't it?
Oh, it sounds horrible. It sounds horrible. Destroying your body.
Yes. And I was like, they made that up. No, that's actually, like, a literal term.
Yeah.
And I was like, fuck, I wish you would have used a different term. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's something that sounds really bad, but it really doesn't mean anything.
Yeah. And there is a scientific term used. Actually, I should have wrote it down. I can't remember it now. But in some of the literature, it uses that. But, like, the layman term for these byproducts of metabolism are acid ash and alkaline ash. So that's true. But when talking about what makes food basic or acidic, we aren't talking about the food itself, per se. What we're really talking about are the byproducts of metabolizing that food. So mainly the minerals in the food. So sulfur and phosphates will lead to acid ash. And calcium, potassium, and magnesium will lead to alkaline ash. And so what type of food are considered alkaline? Like, do you want to just guess what foods that this diet promotes?
Well, it's mostly going to be fruits and vegetables, yep. Stuff like that. But surprisingly, like, milk and cream are also alkaline.
Yeah. Well, that makes sense, though. We've talked about this before. So we're both obviously zero carb for the most part. The one RDA for like a mineral that we get in our diet, but not at a real high level, is what?
Magnesium.
And calcium.
Yeah.
Right? So the only big source of these two minerals are going to be from either dairy or from the plant kingdom. So it makes sense that calcium in the milk and the cream makes it more of a alkaline product than an acidic product, you know?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, because that's definitely, calcium's low in the animal kingdom, it just is. What that shows me is that calcium is overrated as shit as far as the RDA, like it's just overblown, and that's what that shows me. But you can guess what type of foods are considered acidic. So, of course, it's all meats, eggs, fish, shellfish, and grains. So this made me think about, so we talked about pork rinds at some point, I don't know, months ago, and how on the back of the label it says not a significant source of protein because it's lacking a few amino acids, and how pretty much every protein in the plant kingdom should have that same label on it because it's not a complete source of amino acids. The predominant amino acid missing is methionine, and methionine is a sulfur-containing amino acid. So it makes sense that all these animal source foods are going to be acidic because these sulfur acids promote that acid ash. See what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that's kind of really the big distinction between what makes something alkaline and makes something acidic. So
if you guys didn't follow that, don't worry, because they pretty much mean nothing.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, there's nothing to really... Yeah, don't think too hard about that. We'll definitely show you in a minute why you shouldn't worry. But pure fats, sugar, starches, and other foods devoid of minerals are neutral in their reaction. So they won't produce an alkaline ash or an acidic ash. But yeah, like I said, some parts are true. So if you do have like a big smoothie for breakfast, your urine will be more on the alkaline side in time for lunch. Like that's 100% true. But yeah, that just goes into like the instant gratification. You can change your food and then test your urine and then you're more alkaline. Okay, I did a good job, you know? But what these people don't tell you is that none of this shit affects our blood pH at all. Like, and anyone telling you that having a green smoothie affects your blood pH is lying to you.
Because that's not really... We talk about this all the time with our digestive tract. We can kind of say, like, same thing with, like, our urinary tract. Like, that's not really in our body. Mm-hmm. That's not coming into contact with any, like, special tissues. That's just stuff that's outside of our body just waiting to get excreted. So that doesn't have any impact on our body.
Nope.
Whatsoever.
Not whatsoever. Yeah,
exactly. Our blood is what touches all our, like, essential tissues and everything like that. That's what's delivering all the nutrients and stuff. So that's where we really care about pH. And that's not affected at all by what we eat.
At all. Yeah. So the body has a system called the acid-base balance. And that keeps the blood pH within tight margins all the time. So I read... This study, it's actually really short. It's only like 3 pages, but it's called The Question of Acid and Alkaline Forming Foods by James A. Tobey. And normally I wouldn't write the author's name, but like I legit have like a man crush on this dude. I mean, this paper's from 1934, so he's like dead as shit. but he like, I don't know, I'd love this guy. He's like my, I don't know, spirit animal or something, because the way he was talking about this stuff is like how I would talk about it. You know, he's like, these people saying... like, this diet's affecting their blood pH are just idiots. And, I don't know, just for a paper from 1934, this guy was really cool. But this is a quote from that study, and I really like the way he words these things. So, he says, the acid-base balance is a condition in which the ratio of carbonic acid to bicarbonate in the blood is maintained in a definite state of equilibrium. Large changes in blood pH are due to serious disturbances of metabolism or in the functioning of body organs. The effects of food on this acid-base balance have been greatly exaggerated, for their influence in bringing about modifications in the chemical content of the blood is practically nil.
So basically what he's saying is, if your blood pH is messed up, it's because some sort of body organ is failing.
You're dying.
Yeah. That means like your kidneys aren't doing their job, something along those lines, or your lungs aren't operating properly.
Yeah.
Most likely it's one of those two.
100%.
Yeah, the effect of foods is practically nil, means like it's basically zero.
Basically zero. Yeah. So I just love the way that he's so straightforward, and I really liked it. So I'll have that on the website, so definitely check that out if you want. It's literally like 3 pages. You can read it in 10 minutes easy. So it's a good read in my opinion. But so have like the effects of food been studied on people? As far as the acid-base balance, they sure have. So this study called The Effect of Acid Ash and Alkaline Ash Foodstuffs on the Acid-Base Equilibrium of Man. And this is from 1934. Actually, I think I messed up the date. The one earlier was 1936. This one's 1934. Like, that matters. But so, do acid foods make us more acidic? Sure don't. Here's a quote. The diet regularly consumed by the individuals contained potentially as much acid ash as a diet planned to be excessively acid. Diets containing 240 grams of protein on consecutive days produce a doubtfully significant shift in blood picture to the acid side. So 240 grams, that's something most average people aren't going to eat 240 grams of protein a day.
No, that sounds like a lot.
That sounds like a lot, right? Yeah. Somebody like me who actively seeks to hit like a protein mark every day, shoots or something like that, because that's about how much I weigh. Especially if I'm dieting, yeah. You know, that's about my number. But if you're just eating a regular, you know, I guess standard American diet, you're going to be in the 100s. And that's if you eat a steak, you know what I'm saying, or some sort of hamburger. So that's what they're saying. And the main proponent of like the acid ash is going to be protein from like a meat source, animal-based source. So 240 grams is a lot, and it did not affect their acid like balance at all. We talked about, I think it was protein poisoning with the kidneys, and how we get better at metabolizing urea, which is a byproduct of protein metabolism, the more we eat protein. We talked about urea upcycling. Do you remember that? So,
and that's just like anything. The more our body does something, the better we get at it.
Exactly. Yeah. Right? So you would think that, so the main enemy, like with this acid argument, is the animal-based protein. They'll say, you know, eat all this meat, the acid builds up, you get sick. So, well, guess what? Eating protein makes your body better at metabolizing protein. Like I said, urea cycle upregulation. That wasn't true. Upregulation. But this is a quote from like a protein paper. It says, further analysis of the interrelation between diet and acid-base status revealed that increasing protein intake also significantly improves the capacity for renal net acid excretion by stimulating urinary ammonium excretion. Protein itself moderately improves a renal capacity to excrete net acid by increasing the endogenous supply of ammonia, which is a major urinary hydrogen ion acceptor. Boom. Like, think of a positive feedback loop. It prevents a build of acid ash products. Like, protein itself makes you, eating more protein makes you better utilizer of protein. It seems like we're, like, meant to eat this shit.
Yeah, and it's also kind of funny, is one of the main arguments against, you know, the whole alkaline diet is you want to be more alkaline so you don't strip away minerals from your bones. But protein makes up a lot of our bone structure. So why would you want to limit the best source of protein out there?
Yeah, everyone seems to think that our bones are like little chalk sticks. Like it's just like a stick of calcium. Like, no, our bones are at least 50% protein, mainly in the form of collagen. So, of course, protein's going to be good for your bones, you know? Like you say a million times, if you have brain issues, what do you want to eat normally?
I would think brain would be a great place to start.
You know what I'm saying? If our bones are half protein, maybe a high protein diet would be good for our bones. Like, that makes too much sense, you know? But, so acid foods don't make us more acidic. That's been shown. So do basic foods make us more alkaline? Like, that's the whole point of this diet, you know? So they did a study with, they use quarts here. You can think of a quart as like a liter. So the ingestion of 1 liter of milk, 1 liter of orange juice, or 1 pound of bananas produced no temporary shift in the plasma pH or alkaline reserve. Like, no change at all. And, like, who's going to drink 1 liter of orange juice? Well, actually, I bet there are a lot of people drink that, huh?
Yeah, it wouldn't be that hard to do.
I guess it's just weird to me to think that, but yeah, that's super common. I'm too far in this rabbit hole, but yeah, I guess that is super common. But, so there was some good numbers pulled from this paper. So, how many pounds in one sitting of oranges would you have to eat to raise your pH, your blood pH, by 0.2?
It's what, like 1 pound, maybe 2 pounds?
Right? Like, you know, that's still a lot of
0.2 oranges. 0.2 is not that much.
0.2 seems small. You would have to eat 18 pounds of oranges in one sitting to raise your pH by by 0.2.
So it's basically impossible.
Impossible.
Because I'm pretty sure you would start peeing, getting sick, vomiting, somewhere around 3 or 4 pounds.
I would hope so, man.
I don't think you'd be able to get to half of that.
Yeah, like what freak is going to put down 18 pounds of oranges, right? Yeah, crazy. So how many pounds in one sitting of lean beef, and it's funny they actually said lean beef specifically in this study, would you have to eat to lower your pH by 0.2?
I don't know. It's animal fats or animal proteins are so acidic. Half a pound, quarter of a pound,
right?
Probably just one hamburger.
4.5 pounds in one sitting. And this is honestly, people, like, that's crazy. 4.5 pounds?
Yeah, I eat a lot, and that's, I can't eat 4.5 pounds in one sitting.
No, I, like, honestly take pride in my eating capacity. Like, legit, like, I want to take, like, challengers on, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I don't know, but I cannot eat 4.5 pounds in one sitting. And honestly, even if I could, I think my system would handle it okay, but that's still a crazy amount of food. So food does not affect our blood pH. It just doesn't. Any sort of normal eating pattern, you're perfectly fine, you know? And that goes into something we've talked about before. Like, why is it so hard to change our blood pH? It's because of homeostasis. Like, our body has a system in place to keep things in balance. Like, if our blood pH changed wildly with every meal we ate, we'd be dead. We wouldn't even be human, you know?
Yeah, I mean, enzymes are greatly impacted by pH.
Yes.
I mean, there's so many different structures and just, like, nutrients that will be greatly harmed by affecting our pH. That's why it stays in such a tight range. That's why it's so difficult for it to change.
Yeah, and if it wasn't, we'd be paying a price all the time. So when we eat foods that form acid ash, those byproducts, say like a steak, those byproducts are quickly buffered by bicarbonate ions in the blood. And it seems like our body organs are perfectly designed to do this, so our lungs get rid of the carbonic acid in the form of carbon dioxide, and our kidneys create bicarbonate from the acid salts left over. Like, it's a perfect little system. And when somebody, I don't know, someone initially talked to me about this alkaline diet, and I was like, you know, if you really want to be more acidic, like, you're really worried about making your blood acidic, hold your breath. You know what I'm saying? Because that's how our body gets rid of a lot of acid. It's a form of carbon dioxide. People don't really think about that, but that's what we're doing when we're breathing out. We're getting rid of acid byproducts. So, but I guess that's too complicated for people.
What, that you pee out bases and you exhale acids?
You know what I mean? Like, there it is.
I don't know. It's not that difficult.
I don't know. So it really is like a perfect system that we have. You know, the food ingested are used to create the materials needed to buffer those foods. Like, it's just a balance. So protein creates acid ash that needs bicarb to be buffered. Well, protein also creates acid salts, which are turned into bicarb by our kidneys. So here's another quote from a study just talking about this balance with our lungs and our kidneys, which are going to be the two primary organs kind of maintaining our acid-base balance. So with normal lung function, the CO2 produced is excreted, and there is no impact on the systemic acid-base balance. The CO2 generated in this buffering process is excreted by the lungs, whereas the sodium salts of the acids are excreted by the kidneys, principally ammonium chloride and ammonium sulfate. In the process of excreting ammonium, bicarb is generated and returned to the blood to replace the bicarb lost in buffering the acid ash. Doesn't that seem like this makes too much sense?
Oh yeah, definitely.
Like, I just love how the system is set up. Like, this is how our body is designed to work, you know?
So even if we try to do something stupid with our diet, our body will still outsmart us and figure it out.
Yes. 100%. And I love that. I just think it's just, I don't know, it's beautiful about it. Something about it I just really like, just it's balanced, and I really like that. So the accumulation in the body of excess acid occurs as a rule only in certain severe ailments in which there's the disturbance of metabolic processes. So like you said, your kidneys are going out, your lungs are going out. Maybe you're going to be in acidosis, maybe something's going wrong, but it's definitely not going to be affected by food. Like, something serious has to be going on for you to be in those conditions, you know?
Yeah, and even if you have something like pneumonia where your breathing is
impaired.
Yeah, it's slightly impaired. CO2 crosses through like any sort of like fluids that could be in that your lungs, that you can still exhale that, no problem.
Yeah, even if your lungs are full of fluid.
Yeah, so most likely it's like if you're having some sort of acid-base balancing problem, it's most likely going to be with your kidneys.
Yep. Yeah, you'll see that a lot of times with people on like dialysis, stuff like that. That's why, man, having your kidneys go is such a critical thing. I don't think people really appreciate your kidneys, because it's one of those things where your kidneys, you don't notice your kidneys being damaged until they're already like super fucked.
Oh yeah, definitely.
You know, like you don't get put on dialysis until your kidneys are like pretty much gone. It's not like, oh, they're at 50%, let's do dialysis. No, oh, you got 2% left.
And those clinics are everywhere.
Everywhere. Yes, everywhere.
There's like not enough of them.
No, it's a problem. It really is. Yeah. So let's go into a few claims of like the alkaline diet and some of the things they say, some of the things are pro and con. So a negative claim against keto, which is a diet we obviously recommend, is that it is acidic and can harm the body. So is this true? Definitely not. This is usually a mix-up of keto and ketoacidosis, and they're completely different things. And we'll probably talk about ketoacidosis in the diabetes podcast, because that is a problem with them, and that's pretty much like, I always say glucagon run amok, and I'll go into that later on that podcast. Or you can check out the soda podcast, I think I talked about there too, but here's a quote. So ketosis by itself leads to no change in the clinical picture, meaning blood pH, no change at all. So keto, don't worry, it's not going to make you more acidic, it's perfectly healthy. Do you want to talk about, I guess, osteoporosis a little bit, or do you want me to do that?
Yeah, we can get into that.
Yeah.
So there's a claim that acidic foods cause calcium to leach from our bones to neutralize it because there is more calcium in urine after a high-protein meal, which is true, again, only giving you a piece of the puzzle. Is that calcium there to buffer the acid?
Definitely not.
It's just a measure of calcium secretion. When you measure calcium balance, which is absorption minus secretion, you see that with a high-protein diet, we absorb more calcium than we lose.
Yep, and that's just one of those things that came up a lot when I was studying this, is these half-truths. Like, if I show you a paper saying, hey, this guy ate a steak and he peed out twice as much calcium, it's like, oh shit, that's a problem, you know? But they're not giving you the whole picture, you know?
Well, isn't there quite a bit of calcium in that steak, too?
There is calcium in steak, for sure, yeah.
So even though he is peeing it out, that doesn't mean that it even came from his own endogenous sources. It could have just came straight from
the steak itself.
The steak, yeah.
Yeah. So here's a few quotes from just basing it off osteoporosis. So there is no evidence. And by the way, I love these quotes because I think you've noticed this too. A lot of times people hedge their bets in like the nutrition world. Like, you know, there needs more research. None of these people like held any punches. So there is no evidence that increasing the diet acid load promotes skeletal bone mineral loss or osteoporosis. Changes of urine calcium do not accurately represent calcium balance. Promotion of the alkaline diet to prevent calcium loss is not justified. Like, that's black and white.
Yeah, that's pretty clear.
I love that. And here's another one. So dietary advice that dairy products, meats, or grains are detrimental to bone health due to acidic phosphate content needs reassessment. There is no evidence that higher phosphate intake are detrimental to bone health. Again, like shutting door. Like, shut up, you dumb alkaline people.
Well, I would think higher phosphate would be beneficial to bone health. Because really? Phosphorus makes up quite a bit of our bones as well.
But again, those half-truths and people trying to make these little dogmas fit these narratives that just simply aren't true. And you want to touch on alkaline water.
Yeah, because I mean, that's one of the most popular products out there. I see it all over the place.
I never understood why, but I guess this is why people would drink alkaline water, right?
Yeah, it's the whole, it fits in with the, I guess it's a vegan narrative. I don't really like throwing that around too much, but yeah. It's
definitely a plant-based narrative.
Yeah, plant-based. And like the claims around it are pretty crazy. Like, it can help reverse cancer and arthritis and clean up free radicals. So it's basically a miracle drug that's going to cure you of any sort of like modern disease.
And I don't have to work. I just have to drink a water bottle?
Yeah, like that's it. Just switching your water to more expensive version.
Okay.
So where do the benefits actually come from? Because people generally do feel a lot better after they start drinking this alkaline water.
Okay.
So there's actually minerals in the water. So you're getting some calcium, you're getting some magnesium. So hey, you're probably feeling better because you're actually low in magnesium and you're getting that.
Or maybe, that's how they make the water alkaline, right?
Yeah, they're adding minerals. So it's like basically just a mineral water.
Yeah.
So like typical water should be in the range of 6.5 to 8 on that pH scale. This alkaline water that you're buying is usually in that 8 to 9, well outside that range.
Yeah.
So like one of the major places that it's going to affect you is with digestion. So our stomach is very acidic. It needs to be to break down proteins, kill parasites, do a whole host of other things. So raising the pH in our stomach or making it more basic is a very bad idea. It's going to lead to poor protein digestion, poor mineral absorption, and possibly heartburn. If food is staying in your stomach longer, it's because it's not getting digested properly and it's more likely to go back into your esophagus and give you heartburn. Yeah. Not a good thing.
Not a good thing at all. Yeah.
And since protein is involved with so many different processes, like we just mentioned, it's bone, it's muscle, it's enzymes, the list goes on and on. It's a really big deal if you're messing with your protein absorption.
Huge deal.
Yeah. Tyson says this all the time. It's not what we eat, it's what we absorb. And if we're not absorbing this stuff, then we're not getting any of the benefits.
Yeah, that's an angle to the... I don't know why I never thought of that. It's the same thing. Remember we talked about proteins turning into butyrate in our colons?
Yeah.
And I was like, the main benefit of butyrate is beta-hydroxybutyrate, a ketone body. I never made that connection. I felt dumb. I never made the connection that drinking alcohol... I thought alkaline water was dumb always, but I never thought how it would affect our stomach. Like, no shit, it would make our stomach more basic.
Yeah, so I mean, maybe it's okay if you drink it on an empty stomach and you're not going to consume anything else within a 30 to 45 minute window of that.
But with a meal, you're going to see problems.
Yeah, oh, for sure. Yeah. And if you eat, I mean, like if you had a 2 pound steak.
Which I do. I just did, actually.
How long is that sitting in your stomach for?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, that's going to be in there for a while. It's a lot of protein that it needs to break down. So, I mean, you're like, not only are you just getting like poor digestion, like now you can get more parasites because your stomach isn't being acidic enough.
And SIBO is a real thing.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
I mean, so there's just so many different issues that it could cause. Like you're changing the pH of your stomach to something that it never should be at.
Never. No, we're not cows, man. We don't need basic stomachs.
Yeah.
No.
So like the other thing that we already talked about osteoporosis, the next claim is with cancer.
Yeah.
And it's really strange. Like that's, like, it's, hey, we fix your bones and we cure cancer.
Like, miracle.
I don't know. It's really strange. But there's been several studies looking into it. And there's pretty much no evidence that high alkalinity will have the desired effect on cancer. Like, a high alkaline environment is not going to kill cancer cells.
No, sorry.
There's evidence to show that highly acidic environments can kill cancer cells. But there's still, like, more evidence needed with that. And that's with ascorbic acid and vitamin C.
Yeah.
Just high-dose vitamin C to that area has been shown to kill some cancer cells.
Yeah, we're talking, like, IV drips of, like, pharma-grade vitamin C.
Yeah, we're talking about something completely different.
Yeah, completely different, yeah.
Definitely not dietary vitamin C.
No, definitely not. So, yeah, the whole cancer claim, and again, this is those half-truths they'll say. They'll say, you know, cancer forms in an acidic environment only. And that is... Again, do you find, where you find cancer, do you find an acidic environment? Yes, you do. But they have the causal agent backwards. So the acidic environment didn't cause cancer. Cancer actually causes the acidic environment. And they never present that side of the fact, you know, or that side of the story.
So where you see fire, you generally see firefighters. Does that mean the firefighters started the fire? No.
No.
That's not what that means. So that's just the same thing with this whole acid environment and cancer.
It is, yeah. So, but that's not true. Like, you know, they will say that cancer only forms in acidic environments. Therefore, we need to promote a more alkaline diet to prevent cancer. But like I said, not true. Cancer can and does grow in alkaline environments just fine. And cancer itself creates the acidic environment. So it's just, I don't know. The whole thing revolves around like cancer and glycolysis and how cancer really has dysfunctional mitochondria. So they can't rely on like the Krebs cycle, they can't rely on beta oxidation to produce energy. They have to solely rely on glycolysis. And we talked a little bit about cancer as well a long time ago. We need to update that on cancer. We should do another podcast on cancer. Yeah, because we both know a little bit more by now. But yeah, cancer is just really a disease of dysfunctional mitochondria, and they can't burn fat, so they have to burn sugar, and that in itself creates the acidic environment. So again, the cancer claims are a complete bunk. It's just not a thing.
Yeah, and cancer can like be formed in a basic environment.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, most of our body is neutral, slightly basic, and cancer pretty much forms everywhere in our body. It's not like our entire body is acidic.
Exactly.
So there goes that argument right there.
And that took like literally two logical steps to like shut that down. But people will buy this. And you had a, do you want to talk about your little interaction on Facebook years ago or maybe months ago? Someone talked about, someone had cancer and they were promoting like plants for like alkalinity and all that type of stuff. Do you remember that? You talked to me about it.
Yeah, I mean, briefly, I don't really remember what happened with that. Mm-hmm. But somebody posted about cancer and how eating these foods will make you more alkaline and the whole, pretty much what we're talking about now.
Yeah.
And it's just like, well, the cancer cells created that acidic environment.
Yeah.
Due to what you were just talking about, how they're fermenters.
Yeah.
They're fermenting lactic acid over and over and over again. So you can eat all the alkalining foods that you want. It's not going to affect that whatsoever.
It's not, no. And trust me, all these whatever plants and sugars and grains you're going to be eating are not helping the cancer at all. So now the only thing is people do see a benefit sometimes with switching to an alkaline diet. And we talked about that even when we do our arguments of plant-based diets is that sometimes people do see, or even a lot of the times people do see a benefit, but it's not really from the alkaline part of the diet. Like if you go from eating crap, like literally standard American diet, eating clean, like you're gonna see a benefit. You know, like broccoli is better than donuts. The elimination of grains itself from the diet will induce a big change in most people. Like that would be really the benefit of the diet, don't you think? Like instead of having oatmeal for breakfast, now you have, I don't know, a smoothie.
So yeah, that's a good point. Like if you went from drinking like Coke, something that's pretty acidic, and then you switch that to the alkaline water, something that's on the complete opposite scale, yeah, you're probably going to see a lot of benefits.
You're going to feel better. You're going to lose some weight.
There's a lot of sugar and other crap in that soda. There's some minerals and just like better hydration that you're getting from the water. So yeah, you will probably feel better.
Mm-hmm.
But that has very little to do with the pH, and it has everything to do with the sugar that's in the soda and the minerals that are in the water, not the pH.
Not the pH. Yeah, exactly. So yeah, I pulled this quote from that paper again by James A. Tobey. Please read that paper. It's great. Because I just wanted to end with it because, like I said, these papers don't hold punches because the science is like ironclad that the food we eat does not affect blood pH. So this quote is great. I actually wrote it all in caps because I thought it was so good. So food fads fostered by quacks and ignoramuses, some of whom claim MD degrees, are religiously followed by a host of deluded persons. It is the duty of public health officials as the logical educators of the public to aid in debunking fads and follies, such as the belief that acidosis results from acid foods. Isn't that a great quote?
It's been a long time since I've heard ignoramuses in a sentence. I'm not gonna lie.
Yeah, fads and follies. Like I said, this is from the 30s, so he talked a little different, but he was just so like so to the point, you know? Like it is our duty, and I really think like not that we're anything special at all, but it's a duty of public health officials as a logical educators of the public to aid in debunking fads and follies. I feel like that's what we're doing.
I mean, if they're going to play a role in telling people what to eat, they should at least do it right. Mm-hmm. Or just don't accept any responsibility for it.
Yeah.
You know, like one or the other. You shouldn't be promoting the wrong things and banning the good things. That makes no sense.
Makes no sense, yeah. So, I don't know. I love that quote. I wanted to end there. And I don't know. Do you want to say anything else?
No, I think that pretty much covered it. The whole alkaline diet's crap. It doesn't make any sense if you actually think about it.
It doesn't. You have to think about it for 2 seconds.
Yeah, I mean, pretty much your stomach is going to take care of that right away. And then, yeah, you're going to breathe out any extra acids, and you're going to pee out any extra like bases. So, yeah, it's really not going to have that much of an impact.
Don't worry about it at all. So, yeah, next week we're going to touch on the blood type diet if you're interested about next week. So there's a diet out there saying, like, if you're A, eat this. If you're O, eat that. So we're going to go into that a little bit. But let's do a quick tip of the week. So you have one this week?
Yeah, this one came up. You've said this to me several times. Like, my dogs eat better than most people.
Oh, my God. Your dogs are living like kings.
And so when we did that podcast on my dogs and how to feed them, I like joined a bunch of different like dog feeding groups all over social media just to kind of see what other people were doing and just like spreading that out. And somebody posted on there like recently, how many people here eat as good as their dogs do? And pretty much nobody does. Like I'm probably the closest person to that.
Yeah.
They eat really good. But still, I'm like, man, I do treat my dogs so much better.
Yeah.
And that goes just beyond just like making sure they're getting a nutritionally balanced diet. I hate that term, but
yeah.
I mean, it's accurate.
It is.
In my case.
Yeah.
you know, making sure that they're fed properly. I'm making sure that they're getting outside, something that I need to be doing more of. I'm making sure they get exercise, something that's beneficial for people too. You know, like, hey, they're getting sunlight, fresh air, all these things that I think are, like, so important, like, for my dog, but, like, a lot of people ignore them. Like, you know, you should be doing these things for yourself too.
Yes, you should.
Going outdoors in the sun, it's very beneficial. Exercise, it's beneficial. Eating right, it's beneficial. Getting proper sleep, beneficial. Mm-hmm. Like, lowering stress, beneficial. All these things that we're constantly, like, trying to take care of for our pets, that we just completely ignore for ourselves.
It's funny how it is, huh?
Yeah.
It is. No, I always say, man, if you're going to be, like, something I say a lot, you know, I am kind of selfish in my ways because I do focus a lot about myself, but me being the best version of myself allows me to be the best, like, husband I can be, the best worker I can be. Like, you have to, you know, if the plan's going down, you put that life vest on yourself first. You know what I mean? Because if you die, you can't save your kids.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
So, yeah, that's a good tip of the week, man. I really like that. So, yeah, that's another podcast in the books. Thank you for listening. You can find us at TNTWellnessAndNutrition.com. We're on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, so feel free to reach out anytime.
Yeah, please help us like by supporting the podcast. You can rate and review on any of your favorite podcast providers as Google Play, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and YouTube. And there's also a donate button on our homepage of our website, TNTWellnessAndNutrition.com. Hope everybody has a happy and healthy week.